1934 is the year. And if you don't know your history of the United States, that is during a really difficult time in our country. 1934, we were in the throes of the worst depression that our country has ever seen. And I know we've had some pretty tough days in the most recent years, and a lot of people have lost much over the most recent years, but the calamity that occurred to the United States during that time period has been unmatched. And literally millions of people lost everything. It's amazing, during that time period, stories come out left and right of all the horrible things that happened, but it's interesting that in the middle of some of those worst times, how some incredible stories of hope and inspiration come as well. And this morning I want to just share a quick story about a guy by the name of Jimmy. Jimmy was a good man, man of faith, good family man. But Jimmy really wasn't known for all of those things, even though those things may have been the most important. Jimmy was known because of his prowess in the boxing ring. This guy was quite the man. Not really a massive man. He was boxing in the heavyweight division, but he was merely 170 pounds. So he wasn't really a big heavyweight. In fact, he would be classified much differently now. But Jimmy was known for his right hand. He could take down the big boys with one shot. And he was so good that he rose up the ranks steadily for years until 1929 came. And in July of 1929, he had the shot of a lifetime. He was going to get to go against the world heavyweight champion of the world. He was that good in Madison Square Garden. The deal is, though, the heavyweight champion had heard a little bit about Jimmy and had prepared for that right hand. And basically, the way you prepare for a right hand is you stay away from it, right? And he managed to do so for 15 rounds. They went 15 rounds beating, boxing, bruising each other. 15 rounds. And Jimmy lost it in a decision. Can you imagine your whole life building up to this one moment, and in 15 rounds, after you've given it all out there in the ring, you lose it? That began a series of events that just kind of took him down this spiral. A month later, he would actually try to box again, and he would lose that match. And interestingly enough, it was a month later after that. It was actually in September that the stock market crashed in 1929, and it entered the country and Jimmy and his family into the worst depression of their life. Jimmy, now on the backside of what was the most promising career in the country, now is struggling to fight. He's struggling to keep a job, because at this point in time, there were no jobs to be had. These guys would go and they would stand in lines and just hope that their name would be called, or that they would be picked out of a group of people. And when they were working just to be able to haul stuff from the shipyards as the loads would come in. So he would go each day trying to get his name called, many times not ever hearing it. So he's struggling to put food on the table. He's struggling to do the right thing by his family. And of course, he still continued to try to box. But during this time period, he would end up losing 18 out of 22 matches. His career going down the tubes. And I can only imagine, this is a guy who's been training to do what he does, been eating right, and now you don't even have the money to put food on the table for your kids, let alone take care of your own training needs. No doubt he would lose that many fights. But as his career went down, he was towards the end, we were hitting about 1933, and he was in a fight, and with one punch, he punched and literally shattered his right hand. And he would go on to lose the match, but maybe worse is, in shattering his right hand, he didn't have his most valuable asset anymore. He would go on to try to fight one more fight, but would just get completely blown up because he didn't have anything left. So basically, at the end of his rope, he hung up his gloves and then ended up basically hanging up his pride as well, because at that time period, in order to keep his family together and not have to farm his kids out, he would have to go on government assistance to just try to get money and food on the table. And during that time period, taking government assistance was probably one of the worst difficult things that you could ever do because of the pride of the people in that time period. And Jimmy, it broke him to finally get to that place, but he did it in order to take care of his family. And then we get to 1934. His manager comes to him and he says, "I think I've got one fight for you if you're interested." And Jimmy said, "I don't know if I can do it, but I'll give it a shot. I'll do it." Keep in mind, this has been a year now. Jimmy hasn't fought. He hasn't really prepared, but at the same time, his body hasn't taken the bruising either. So he says, "I'll do it." And he has literally, because this was a kind of a disqualification situation or someone who had just backed out, Jimmy really just had a couple of days, so he got as prepared as he could, and he enters the ring with John Corncob Brown. Now, understanding Jimmy's situation, nobody gave him a shot. Nobody gave him any chance to win this match. He was just a fill-in to give this guy some warm-up to get to his next fight. But Jimmy would go into the ring, and not only would he win the fight, but he would win it in three rounds by knocking the dude out with a nice, firm right hand. Then, because he won that fight and won it so convincingly, the interesting thing is he was like a lower card to the heavyweight championship that would be fought later on. And they said that that heavyweight championship fight was a bruising fight, but everybody came out talking about Jimmy. So guess what? That gave Jimmy another shot. And he started training, and he ended up winning three more fights. Those three fights now position Jimmy to fight for the World Heavyweight Championship. Imagine that. You're going from nothing to now you're at the top again. But this time, Jimmy knows where he comes from. Jimmy knows just how long ago. And this is only a year later now. This is 1935. And he's supposed to go up against the big Max Bear. And Max Bear lived up to his name now. He was a bear in the ring. He was almost unhandleable. In fact, if you look at the rankings now, they have rankings for some of the most vicious hitters in boxing. And in the heavyweight division, Max Bear ranks in the 20s still. Everybody knew that this guy, in fact, this tells you how vicious he was. After a boxing match one time, a guy went to the hospital and ended up dying because of the massive blows that Max Bear gave to him. This dude was a beast. And needless to say, Jimmy's wife was a little concerned. And I would dare say that probably Jimmy was a little bit concerned, but he had learned a lesson from his previous heavyweight championship bout. Same thing that the previous champion did to him, he realized he needed to do to Max Bear. We just keep our distance enough, and we make him fight. And it went, again, 15 rounds. But this time, Jimmy won. And now, Jimmy Braddock, otherwise known if you've maybe seen the movie The Cinderella Man, played by Russell Crowe, Jimmy Braddock was now the world heavyweight champion. And his life forever changed. His family's life forever changed. And you say, how in the world, how does somebody do something like that? It's because they refuse to give up hope. I told you at the beginning he was a man of faith. And if you watch the movie and if you read some biography, you realize he was a devout Catholic. And he spent much of this time leaning on the encouragement of those who were spiritually pouring into him at this time. He knew that he needed something more than what he had internally to give. And as a result of that, he experienced something more than what anybody could ever think he could do. And this morning, in a group this size, I am fully aware that there is probably somebody that's walked in here and they feel like they've done 15 rounds with a bear. You're beaten up. You're bruised. You may be on the heels of something, or you might be just entering into something. And you realize, I don't know what I've gotten myself into. I don't even know if I can come out of this the way I think I should or the way I want to. And I guarantee you there's probably somebody here that's just ready to kind of hang it up. Be done. I'm done. Count me out. And it's in these moments, and it can happen from any circumstance. It can be your job where you have a boss that's breathing down your neck. Absolute maniac, maybe a him or a her. It could be a situation at home. Maybe as a parent, your kids are absolutely taking you off the cliff. Been there. Got a couple of teenagers. I seem to visit the cliff quite often. But from a teenager standpoint, sometimes you feel like your parents just don't understand. Kind of like the old Will Ferrell song, right? Not Will Ferrell. Williams. No. Will Smith, yeah. Well, I just went completely blank there. 41 years old, you know, it just kind of leaves you sometimes. Sorry about that. But, you know, at the end of the day, we all face these situations. Sometimes we create these situations by our own making. We've made 100 right decisions, but the last two decisions we've made have taken us down a rabbit hole that we can't seemingly crawl out of. Or somebody else has made those decisions for us, and now all of a sudden, we sit in this place and we're like, I didn't even ask for this. I didn't get me here. God, what's up? And it's in those moments that there is an oh-so-subtle deceiver that whispers in our ear. And you know what he's saying? You're not worthy. You're not good enough. You can't do this. In fact, you were designed to lose. You were never meant to win. And you know what makes him so subtle and so deceitful? Is sometimes he even puts it then in our first person. He doesn't say you. He says, man, I'm not worthy. I can't measure up. I can never do that. I'm a loser. And before we realize it, we sit in this place where we feel like we are completely beat down by our own circumstances, whether by our choice or by another's, and we don't know where the direction is to crawl out. But what I have information for you today to realize is, and I want you to listen to this very clearly, because in the midst of all those voices crying out to you and saying that you can't and saying that you're unworthy and saying that it's not possible, behind all of that, there is a still, small voice that's calling your name. And he is saying to you, listen. Listen to me. Because through me, you can find hope, you can find victory, and you can find the ability to overcome any circumstance you're in the middle of right now. And this morning, that still small voice comes in the form of 2 Corinthians chapter 4. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 7 through 18. I'm just gonna pick out the first three verses at first, but I wanna set the stage here. In verse 7, Paul starts off and says, this precious treasure. And when he says this precious treasure, he's talking about Christ and the presence of Christ in our life, okay? He says, this precious treasure, this light and power that now shine within us is held in perishable containers, that is, in our weak bodies. So it's like the most precious wine has been poured into these broken clay pots. The clay pots themselves are worth nothing. In fact, if you just put the clay pot by itself, nobody wants it. We're broken, we're ugly, we're beaten down, we're shattered. But when you pour the wine in it, now we got something. And nobody wants that for the clay pot. Nobody's going to hang on to the clay pot afterwards. Everybody wants what's inside. And that's the picture that Paul is painting here. We have something special. We have something unique. If you have Jesus Christ in your heart, in your life, you have something that people want. You have something that people need. And then he goes on. And this is where it gets really, really fun. So everyone can see that our glorious power is from God and is what? Is not our own. This isn't a flesh parade. This isn't about us pumping ourselves up. This isn't about Dwayne, or this isn't about anybody else. But this is about God in us. And if he can do this, if he can pull this off, then he will get the glory for all of it. Now, I love what Paul says. He says, we are pressed on every side by troubles, but we are not crushed and broken. We are perplexed, but we don't give up and we don't quit. We are hunted down, but God never abandons us. We get knocked down, but we get up again and we keep going. I love how it really kind of typifies the song we just heard, and it typifies the story that I started with. Life is a lot like a boxing match. You just keep getting beaten. You keep getting battered. But through Christ, there is an answer to that. There is a way to strike back. In fact, there's a way to take the fight to the enemy. But first of all, we've got to understand that there is a battle that rages around us. There is a battle that is constantly going on. Even if we don't see it with our eyes, in the heavenlies, there is a battle that rages. And I want you to think of these four words when we talk about it. First of all, Paul described it as being pressed. If you look in your guide, you'll see there are four blanks here. I'm giving them to you so you can remember them. Pressed, perplexed, pursued or persecuted. And the last one is pummeled. I'll say it again, pressed, perplexed, pursued, and pummeled. Let's talk about those a little bit. When he says that we're being pressed, what's he mean? He means that we're being pressed or we're being hedged in, we're being contracted, or we're being squeezed. And the word picture that's given with that is like we're being squeezed like grapes. And it's kind of the idea of trying to hem us in. But literally, if you look at a wine press in that time period, literally squeezing all of the juice out of the grapes. That's the description that Paul is giving. Ever felt like that? Perplexed. Pretty interesting word. Not only does it mean directionally challenged, so basically you have absolutely no idea where you're going. Been there? But we're bewildered. We're just kind of confused over the whole thing. But the last thing I want to mention, suffering embarrassment. Perplexed. We're literally, because we don't know what to do or because we've gone out and tried to do without knowledge, we're suffering embarrassment from our own self. Pretty powerful. Third word, pursued or persecuted. Means that we are hard driven, we're being hunted down. And the word picture that's given here is the idea of an animal literally being hunted or being pursued, being tracked and watching their footprints. And if you've hit them before, it's watching the blood print and literally hunting that animal down until they can't run anymore. The last one, pummeled. That's kind of speaks for itself, but means you're beaten. You're knocked down. You're struck down to the mat. There's nothing else that you can really do. You're just getting completely clobbered. I've given you four words here. And my question to you is, whether or not you're in that exact space right now, wouldn't we agree that we have all been there at some point? And I guarantee you there is somebody sitting here right now who may have been through years of this type of beating down. And I guarantee you after you go through that much time, you begin to wonder if there is a bright day ahead. And, you know, I'm kind of one of those guys. When I've gone through some of those time periods, and I think I'm starting to see a light at the end of the tunnel, I'm the first one to ask, is it a train coming? Because I don't want to hit another train. I've hit plenty of them. In fact, I've been known every now and then as what's called a train wreck. And I'm not interested in joining another one. But when you look at this, the reality is we face these difficulties. And if you haven't faced one yet, trust me, you are going to get to this place. There are some things that we need to understand from this part of the passage and some misconceptions that we need to kind of parlay out. First of all, the Christian life is not a cakewalk. Okay? I don't know if anybody has listened to television preachers, and there are some that are fantastic. But there are a few of them that would lead you to believe if you just accept Jesus and send a little money, that the gates of heaven are going to open wide open, they're going to pour money into your bank account, you're not going to have another problem, everything is just going to be fantastic. Right? Well, I am going to be the antithesis of a television preacher today, and I'm going to tell you that that is complete heresy. Now, does it mean that God won't supply and won't bless? No, I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that the Christian life oftentimes has more difficulty than the unsaved life. Do you understand why? Because now you really have an enemy. Satan does not like it when you're going against him. So when you make the choice and when you accept what God has for you, guess what? Somebody else doesn't like that. So now life changes. And it is not a cakewalk. There are going to be difficulties. There are going to be struggles. And in fact, it brings me to the next thing, the next misconception, is that God will never put more on you than you can handle. And there's a passage of scripture that people use commonly. The problem is they take it out of context. And they miss the simple piece that, no, God won't put more on you than you can handle. But that's with the understanding that you're depending upon someone else. And that there is someone within you that has far more power than you do. And let me just ask you that, just out of curiosity, how much do you think Jesus can handle? Say he can handle quite a bit, right? Considering he made this thing, I think he can handle a lot. So when you've got Jesus inside of you, what does that mean you can handle? But when we start pulling this back and peel the onion back and we start talking about ourselves, what can we handle by ourselves? A whole lot of nothing in my end. You guys may be a little bit better than me, and I'm going to make that assumption that you're probably far better than I am. But I'm going to tell you that Dwayne is a big zero. When I start handling things on my own, things get deep real fast, and I can't handle them. So understand this, God will give you more than you can handle. And you say, why would he do that? To help you understand that you need him. If you were never pressed beyond your own abilities, why would you ever think you needed a savior? Why would you ever think you needed God at work in your daily life? So he presses us, he forces us outside of ourselves. And the last one, the Christian life, somehow we've got to muster enough energy up. We've got to muster something up to get more out of it. That if it is to be, it is up to me. Now, what I want to give some credence to is there should be an element in our lives that we don't give up. There should be a heart within us, but that heart should be springing out of what Christ is doing in us. And understand this. That no quit, never say die is always a reflection of the Savior that gave his life for us. You on your own, in your own strength, can never make this happen. But Christ through you can. So we've seen a battle that rages, but there is something more. And if you look at this passage of Scripture, he doesn't just leave us with these four characteristics: oppressed, perplexed, pursued, and pummeled. But he says, you're pressed, but you're not crushed. He says, you're perplexed, but you're not going to quit. He said, you're pursued, but you're not going to be outcast. You're going to be pummeled, but you won't be shattered. And those are your four things. You actually are crush-proof, you're quit-proof, you're outcast-proof, and you are shatter-proof. What does that mean? What does it mean to be crush-proof? It means that you are not, even though you are being squeezed like a grape, you will not be crushed beyond recognition. Why is that? Because someone within you is pushing out as the crush is coming. You can't crush Jesus. You can try, but you'll never succeed. So you're crush-proof with him within you. You're quit-proof. The idea is here is that you're not going to despair. You're not going to be without hope. You're not going to be destitute without measures or direction or opportunity outside. It means that there is always a way out with Jesus. And what I would say to that is, you say, well, what about those guys that died for their faith? That was their way out. And they were more than happy to take it. Because to be absent from this body is to be present with the Lord. There is always a better day with Christ taking control of the situation. It means you're outcast proof. And I love this one. Even though we're pursued, even though we are persecuted, even though we are constantly being hunted down, you know what God tells us? I am never going to leave you or forsake you. If you will look to me, if you will accept me, and if you will lean upon me, guess what? You've got a partner for life. And I will always be there. In fact, I'm not only going to be with you in the moment, but that corner that you can't see around, don't you love that when you're walking down a hallway and there's a corner coming and you turn that corner and you literally slam into somebody? Guess what? God's standing at the corner. He sees what's coming. We don't have to wonder. He's there to direct. And he will guide and he will provide each step of the way. For those of you who feel lonely today, you don't have to be alone anymore. Even though you're pursued, even though you're persecuted where you're at, you do not have to be alone. And the last thing, even though you're being pummeled, even though you're being beaten down to the mat, you are shatterproof. You are indestructible. You are able to withstand whatever comes because of the God that is within you. You may not feel like it right now, but the more you set your heart and your eyes upon him, all of a sudden everything changes. There's a quote that I wanted to just share with you. Well, before I do that, I want to take a couple of key learnings because I think this is important. From those areas where when we realize that these things are at place in our life, we realize these three things. First of all, we have a choice. Our most difficult situations in life will either be the things that cause us to define who we are as losers, or we'll allow them to be learning opportunities. I learned a long time ago. Is probably quite a long time ago because I'm 41 now. Or about to turn 41. And when I was young, I used to think that every loss meant I was a loser. I couldn't stand to lose a basketball game, couldn't stand to lose a baseball game, couldn't stand to lose anything in school. I always wanted to be number one. And what I realized as I grew older is that just because I lose a battle doesn't mean I've lost a war. And at the end of the day, we can either choose to be defined by the little singular losses that we have in our life, or we can allow them to be the teachers that take us to a new place. That's our choice. The second thing that we learn from this is wherever we place our gaze, that's where the importance is raised. If we place our gaze on the struggle at hand, then guess what gets magnified in our mind? It's that trouble. But what happens when we are in the midst of trouble and we lift our eyes to the God of heaven? All of a sudden, the God of heaven becomes far bigger than anything else that we have going on in our life. Why do we spend 15 minutes before we ever get to this time worshiping God? It's to magnify His mighty name. It's to make Him big in our eyes because we need Him big. It's not because He shrunk, it's just because we've allowed Him to shrink. His beauty, His glory is worthy of all of our praise, and He alone is the one that can bail us out. The last thing, and this is important, I want you to listen to this. I want you to catch this. When you feel like you're at the end of your rope, you are never at the end of hope. When you are at the end of your rope, folks, you are never at the end of your hope. Even when things look their worst and the day is at its darkest, remember this: with Christ there, the dawn is coming. There will be a time where all the tears that you shed and all the struggles you face will be turned to laughter, and the mourning will be turned to dancing because of the Jesus that is within your heart. Verses 16 through 18, before I do that, Jimmy Valvano, famous basketball coach, died from cancer, but gave a speech just before his death, probably about 3 or 4 months before, realizing he was dying. He said, "I got one last thing, and I said it before, and I want to say it again. Cancer can take away all of my physical abilities, but it cannot touch my mind. It cannot touch my heart. And it cannot touch my soul, and those three things are going to live forever." And I have a feeling old Jimmy V maybe read 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 through 18 before he gave that speech, because listen to what Paul said. "That is why we never give up. Though our bodies are dying and our spirits are being renewed every day. For our present troubles are quite small and won't last very long. Yet they produce for us an immeasurably great glory that will last forever. So we don't look at the troubles we can see right now. Rather, we look forward to what we have not seen yet. For the troubles we see will soon be over, but the joys to come will last forever." Folks, I want to remind you of something. In the book of James, it tells us not only are our troubles short, but our lives are too. James says that our lives are like a vapor. And the question is not really how long we live or how short we live. The question is, what are we going to do with our vapor? What are we going to do with that little bit of time that we have? You have a choice. You can live in defeat, or you can be undefeated. And God gives you the option today. There was a guy way back in the Old Testament leading the army of Israel, surrounded on every side by three different armies. And guess what? He was perplexed. He was about to be pummeled. He was about to be in a situation where he couldn't handle it anymore. And Jehoshaphat looked up to heaven and he said, "Oh my God, I don't know what to do, but my eyes are on you." My guess is some of you are in that same place. You've got a God who is big enough and ready enough to enter your circumstance whenever you're ready to let Him in. And this morning can be your morning. As we reflect and as we allow God to allow this to sink in, maybe it's you need to accept Jesus Christ as your Savior, or maybe you just need to let God be the the manager and conductor of your life. Whatever that decision is, will you do it right now? As we stand and our band leads us in